Welcome to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from the Salt Lake Tribune and KCPW, heard around the state on Utah Public Radio. I'm Roger McDonough, and today on the program, with the election just days away, we're going to take the hour to drill down on how the election is playing out here in Utah. From the somewhat surreal world of the race for the White House, where Donald Trump appears to be surging in the Beehive State, to the battle in the 4th District, where polls maybe show a narrowing margin, to the governor's race, the Senate, and beyond, who's ahead in the final stretch, and what last-minute tactics are being employed by the candidates. To talk about all of this, joining me here in the studio this morning are Salt Lake Tribune government and politics reporters Matt Canham, Robert Gerke, as well as columnist George Pyle. Welcome, gentlemen. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
And on the phone from Washington, D.C. is Salt Lake Tribune Washington correspondent Thomas Burr. Thanks as well for joining us, Tommy.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Listeners, they say religion and politics aren't polite dinner conversation, but it's still early, so call us up with your thoughts on what's happening as the election, its hour come round at last, slouches towards its inevitable finish, or at least that's what we all hope. Call us at 801-355-TALK, that's 801-355-8255, or comment at sltrib.com. Well, here we are with 4 days and change out from the election, and Matt Canham, let's begin the hour with the apparent Trump surge in Utah. I thought we were experiencing an Evan McMullen moment, but recent polls don't exactly bear that out, I guess.
Yes. Yesterday, we saw three different polls come out. These are all independent polls from national organizations, and they all show one trend, that you have Donald Trump coming up, Evan McMullen sliding, and Hillary Clinton roughly staying where she was. Okay. So just to go through the polls really quickly, Monmouth University, which I believe is in New Jersey, had Trump at 37, Hillary Clinton at 31, and Evan McMullen at 24. That was the smallest gap. That was only 6 points. Wow. Rasmussen had Trump up by 11. Emerson College had Trump up by 12. So the trend, what we had seen is this margin of error race between Evan McMullen and Donald Trump has now widened.
And at least in one poll, Evan McMullen has dropped a third there.
Yeah. In actually two of these, he's third. You know, this is the hard part. When we did our own polling, we found that Evan McMullen's support was a little bit soft. It was someone who was voting for him because they didn't like Donald Trump. And when asked, they said, yeah, there's a chance they might change their mind. You had this big rush. Robert Gerke here covered Mike Pence's visit and a rally up at the Capitol. And it looks like this effort by Republicans to get these disaffected Republicans to give Donald Trump a second look has had some benefit.
Okay. So, And it seemed at first like there were a lot of people who didn't want to be associated with Trump here in Utah. But Utah is a Republican state. Not at first, actually. At first, it was maybe vague. But Utah's this Republican state. We have the GOP nominee trying to shore up support. But Robert Gerke, originally we saw him losing ground. And of course, after the Access Hollywood video came out, we saw him lose additional ground. Why this late surge?
Well, I think Matt hit on it. I think people, when they sat down with their ballots, they thought about, you know, am I going to vote for a guy that cannot possibly win the presidency? Or am I going to vote, you know, to vote for Donald Trump and try to block Hillary Clinton? And again, these polls have consistently showed that despite the fact that Donald Trump has a 70% unfavorable rating in Utah, according to our Dan Jones poll, Hillary Clinton's at 75%. There's really only one other person who could lose to Donald Trump, and it just so happens she's running as the Democratic candidate right now. And so, the same on the other side. Both of them are wildly unpopular, and I kind of joked that the two things that Evan McMullen has going for him in this election is, one, he's not Donald Trump, and two, he's not Hillary Clinton. That's all he was, and that's why people were supporting him, and he happens to be LDS. So I think what you've seen is just sort of a solidification. And we see this a lot at the end of the election. The undecideds kind of come back to their party roots, or come back to their party bearings, moorings, I guess I should say. And then you know, you have a hard time when you're a voter, I guess, justifying a vote for a guy that, even though he could win Utah, and that would be kind of significant and historic, and it would be, as McMullen puts it, a vote on principle rather than politics. There's a lot at stake in this election. And I think the other thing that Matt also hit on, when Mike Pence came to town, the message was come home. It's time for Republicans to come home. And we get that you're not happy, but it's time for you to come home. But he also hits on a couple issues that are very important to Republican voters. And one is the Supreme Court. You know, there's going to be three or four, or Senator Hatch said up to five Supreme Court justices appointed by the next president. And that drastically remakes or revamps the entire face of the Supreme Court and the rulings that are going to come out of the Supreme Court. And then they also hit hard on the religious liberty issue, which is one that I think resonates particularly with Mormon voters in this state. And so I think that, you know, with that, with those stakes on the line, a lot of especially Republican Mormon voters kind of came home,
returning to Trump. Well, I want to remind listeners that you can join this conversation. We'd love to hear your comments on the election, how you're going to vote, why you're going to go that way. Call us at 801-355-8255. Maybe you've already cast your ballot. Again, 801-355-TALK. You mentioned the Pence rally, not the Pence, yeah, the arrival of Mike Pence, a vice presidential candidate. But then this week also there was a Trump rally at the state capitol. Which Utah Republican lawmakers were there? Who wasn't there? And why?
It's an interesting split that still remains in the Republican Party right now, because you had Senator Hatch and you had Chris Stewart, who just until recently was sort of on the fence about whether or not he was going to support Donald Trump. But you didn't have people like Gary Herbert and Spencer Cox and Mike Lee, Mia Love. None of those people are on board right now. And so, you know, the rally itself, I mean, in terms of who was there versus who wasn't, you really had in among the elected officials, it was pretty much split. Sean Reyes sent a statement. He wasn't on hand, but he sent a statement of support. So it's about 50-50.
And is it 50-50 of those who are going to hold their nose and vote for Trump, but they don't want to be at the rally, and then, you know, the others who are there at the rally?
Well, and that goes to the Jason Chaffetz sort of trying to straddle the fence, I think. He's said that he's going to vote for Trump, but he's not going to endorse or defend or support him. I think the other, was it on Fox yesterday? He said.
And CNN.
Yeah,
CNN. He did a media round yesterday on
this. He hopes he can look his daughter in the eye and, you know, or hopes that he's not going to be embarrassed by it. But he's also played a very prominent role in the other news that we've seen this week in the election was with the leaking of the James Comey letter to the House Oversight Committee.
Absolutely. And I want to bring in Thomas Burr in Washington on that. But first, I guess I'm wondering if this divide, both nationally and locally in the Republican Party, is that kind of waning? And Tommy, maybe you can address this first. I'm sure nothing surprises you at this point, but Utah politics.
Everything surprises me.
Well, is that divide going away? I mean, Utah politicians were thought to be at the forefront of a revolt against Trump. Now he's leading here. What are we seeing in terms of national polls in the presidential race? And I guess, you know, are you ready for the ride, Thomas?
You know, I'm never ready for this. But look, you're seeing the tightening in a lot of the battleground states right now. And some of that interesting coming home thing, we just learned that Paul Ryan, the House Speaker, is going to do a rally with Mike Pence in Wisconsin. And, you know, Paul Ryan's been trying to do the same kind of thing as Chaffetz in some ways, like, you know, supporting the nominee without supporting the nominee. So now that he's going to speak at a rally, he's trying to rally galvanize, I guess, the Republican base to turn out and vote. But you're really seeing tightening in Florida, which is now, you know, really just on the cusp between Clinton and Trump. Nevada is really close. North Carolina is also so close. And these are states that Clinton was leading in, you know, 2 weeks ago with good, not healthy margin, but, you know, good enough lead that the campaign felt pretty comfortable in those states. Now it's really back up in the air.
Back up in the air, and I guess nationally, in terms of just how tight this poll, the polls are between, or what the likelihood of an outcome is between Hillary and Trump. I know 538, you know, Nate Silver's election podcast or blog kind of tends to lean towards or show Hillary with a likely victory or somewhat likely victory. What are you seeing, Thomas?
I'm actually looking at it right now.
Okay, great.
I'm glad you brought it up. I mean, Florida right now, Nate Silver's saying it's 50.7% chance Clinton wins, 49.3% Trump wins. But yesterday, he was noting that they run these simulations with all the data and their methodology and all this kind of stuff. And yesterday they ran it like 10,000 times. And 5,000 times Trump won Florida, and 5,000 times Clinton won Florida. So really, this is all coming down to a ground game on Election Day, and also early voting. I mean, look at half what 30-something percent of Utahns have already voted.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's pretty amazing. You know, I'm thinking now about the efforts between the candidates to get the vote out here and trying to make those votes happen. We saw, of course, Mike Pence. We saw this Trump rally. We also have seen some efforts by Hillary Clinton here in Utah. Most recently, I guess, in terms of a surrogate who came this week, Samwise Gamgee, a hobbit. I mean, just kidding. Actor Sean Astin.
Hobbits for Hillary.
Yeah, hobbits for Hillary. How big is her coordinated effort in Utah, Ben, Robert, Gerke?
She's sent out 5 additional staffers, which I think is fairly unusual for a Democratic candidate to be doing this late in the game. Typically, they're deploying those people into the big electoral battleground states. Today, Tim Kaine's wife, Ann Holton, is going to be in town trying to rally early voting. So I think they've been active. We haven't maybe got the A-list, you know, with Sean Astin and the vice presidential nominee's wife are not, you know, we're not getting Clinton, we're not getting Bill, we're not getting, you know, Kaine. But it's they are putting a lot of effort into it, and it seems to be paying off, because I believe the poll yesterday, it may have been the Monmouth one, that said that she's winning among early voters with 43%, which is pretty remarkable, because as you noted, 30% of the voters have already voted, and you like to have those votes in the bank before Election Day, because it makes your Election Day efforts a lot easier.
A certain degree of momentum. Are people in Utah waiting to vote? I mean, are we going to see campaigning up until Tuesday? And I guess also, does Hillary Clinton see a chance of taking Utah now that I guess Evan McMullen is kind of fading a little bit and Donald Trump is surging? Is she seeing a window of opportunity here?
I mean, I think you got to pick your poll. And there's one poll that shows we're only down 6. And for Democrats in Utah, that's a pretty exciting scenario. So they are hoping that this is a chance for them to get a victory. And this election is so unusual for Utah because it's our first one with mail-in balloting. And it changes drastically how you campaign. The campaigns get a list of every person who voted every day, which means they know if their supporters have already weighed in, so they can direct their resources to individuals who they think are going to vote for them and bug them more and stop spending resources on people who already voted. This is a change in strategy we haven't seen here. And so how that plays out is a little unusual, but it also supports people who have a strong ground game. So as Robert said, Hillary Clinton has 5 staffers here. Donald Trump is not as organized in the state of Utah. He's relying on the fact this is a conservative state. Evan McMullen, the independent, is the only candidate here running a day-to-day campaign. Today, he's going to be in Logan and Brigham City up north. Tomorrow, he's going to be all the way down in St. George and rallying up and down the I-15 corridor. So he is trying to get people to vote. What these polls have shown is that Republicans are holding on to their ballots. We've seen that with county clerks being concerned about this as well, that they're not getting as many ballots as they thought because Republicans are waiting. It makes sense that Republicans would wait. If you're a Democrat, you know who you're going to vote for. If you're a Republican, this might be a little bit harder. And so you might wait till a little bit later in the process.
If it's the point Matt made about how get out the vote has changed is really it's remarkable, because 20 years ago, a get out the vote effort was you'd send buses to retirement homes and bus these retirees to the polling places, and now you actually contact them. You just hammer them text messages and phone calls, and you make sure you knock on their door, and you know you got to get these ballots in. It's a lot more surgical, it's a lot more precise, but and it's a lot more effective. And I just want to say one thing about the Emerson poll in particular. That one just baffles me, and I'm going to like sort of maybe opine a little bit here. I don't buy that poll. I don't see how Rasmussen, which typically leans Republican, has this race a lot closer than Emerson does. And so there's something a little funny going on there. And so I think I don't think this is a 12-point race right now.
Well, time will tell. And Tuesday, maybe we'll know on Tuesday. George Pyle, I want to bring you in on this during the primaries. I mean, we've been talking about the division in the Republican Party. During the primaries, we saw some division in the Democratic Party between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders supporters of Bernie Sanders. And there was a lot of equating at the time of that division to the split in the Republican Party. And I'm wondering if it's the same thing. Are we still seeing that split in the Democrats versus what's happening in the Republican Party?
Well, Bernie Sanders, of course, has been out on the stump for Hillary Clinton, and he's really been trying to
to tell his followers that, you know, don't sit home and sulk because we didn't win the nomination. You need to come out and vote for Hillary. And that is going to be a big question. I don't know how much it's going to break in Utah, but necessarily, but nationwide. It is going to be a big question as to whether the Bernie Sanders supporters will do what their leader is telling them to do, and that's come and vote for Hillary Clinton, or whether they're still going to feel like this is all just proof that the system is rigged and the people who make speeches on Wall Street are the ones who get the nomination. And they're not going to vote for Trump, most of them, although there's still a little bit of an overlap between the Trump voters and the Sanders voters in the feeling that as I say, the system is rigged. The normal people don't have a voice. And even people who would much prefer Bernie Sanders might say, well, the only chance I have to knock the table over is to vote for Trump. Although I think probably the Clinton campaign concern is that these people will just stay home.
I'm sure that that's a concern on both sides of the aisle, of course, that people will just stay home and not vote and trying to motivate your base in the run-up to the election. You know, before we go to our first break, we've been talking about the Trump surge here in Utah, and another potential reason for that surge and here and across the nation has to do with the announcement that the FBI had discovered some emails potentially tied to Clinton's time at the State Department on Anthony Weiner's laptop. Thomas Burr, this was already a kind of convoluted story to begin with. What's the latest?
You know, we really don't know whether these emails are substantive at any point. We don't know if we're going to learn any more before the election. So really just kind of toss things back into that fluid situation, gave Donald Trump a lot of ammunition to talk about on the trail of Hillary and her emails. The Clinton campaign, which had hoped this was over and done, is now, you know, trying to defend itself, not knowing what's in these emails that are being investigated by the FBI. Long story short, there's a lot of concern about what the FBI is doing with Comey's letter coming out 11 days before the election. And since, we've seen multiple different leaks to different news outlets about, you know, what they're doing with this investigation. So the concern is, anytime the FBI speaks about this, they're influencing voters.
Right. Back in July, Comey said he wouldn't recommend any charges be filed against Clinton for what he called her careless handling of classified information when she used a private email server as Secretary of State. Is what the FBI is looking at now essentially part of that same story, emails from her time as Secretary of State? Tommy?
Yes, it is. And the case was never technically closed. You know, he said that what they had proved there was no criminal wrongdoing, because, you know, that does actually show that they, you know, intentionally leaked classified information or anything like that. From what we're seeing from these FBI leaks, it sounds like these emails were on Anthony Weiner's laptop are new. They're not something that was, they're not duplicative, but they haven't said whether in any way that would change what Comey said in July. So we're left in this area of limbo of not knowing there's something out there, but not knowing if it's bad or good.
Well, I want to stay with that story for a little bit, but let's bring in a caller. We've got Adam in Salt Lake City, who has a comment about the presidential race between Hillary and Donald Trump and Evan McMullen here in Utah. Adam, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for taking my call.
And what's your comment?
Well, I'm mostly a stay-at-home dad. I have a 20-month-old daughter. I don't really want to be voting for Clinton because, honestly, she's not liberal enough for me. She is pretty moderate, but I think maybe one of the most important decisions, or one of the most important things for me to think about making my election decision, is the fact that if we elect a woman president, I can demonstrate to my daughter that her voice matters. And I really think, you know, in terms of what Trump has said about women, the things that just keep coming out about him, I mean, it's a pretty important thing, I think, to think about, the fact that over 50% of the people in this country are women, and I think their voice matters. And I just want to demonstrate that to my 12-month-old daughter.
With your vote,
that we can elect a woman president.
Adam, can I ask you a quick question? Were you, if you don't mind answering it, were you a Bernie Sanders supporter in the primaries? Were you somebody who was, I mean, you talk about being more liberal, who wanted to see Bernie Sanders as the candidate?
You know, I'm sort of skeptical because I don't know that a truly liberal candidate could get anything done in Washington. And in fact, I don't know, even if we elect Trump, I don't know that any of his policies could be enacted. I mean, Obama clearly cannot get anything done. And maybe that's because he's up against Republicans who, you know, will just not back anything that he says, but I just don't. I liked what Bernie Sanders had to say, but I didn't hear that there were things that could actually happen. And I think that's kind of the point that we're at in this country, is that we need probably moderate candidates. That's about the only people who could really get anything done.
All right.
And so I liked Bernie Sanders, but I couldn't back him because I couldn't hear anything.
Adam,
that might really happen.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for your call. And Adam talking about his vote to sort of make a point to his daughters and an objection of Trump there. Hillary Clinton not being liberal enough, but there being obstruction. Matt Canham.
I just find it very interesting when we talk to or hear from voters like this, how little a factor Hillary Clinton's gender actually is in this race. If you look back to 2008 when Barack Obama ran, the fact that he was the first person of color as a nominee was a massive, massive deal. And while we have had moments where we reflect on the fact that we could have a first woman president, it is just a very minor undercurrent in this story, in part because she has been such a public figure for so long that we all know who Hillary Clinton is. She's not new to the scene. And I think that it's one of the most underplayed parts of this election.
Well, minor maybe to some and major probably to others, but I don't know if it's...
I mean, in the storyline. I don't mean that it's not important to people. I mean, in the storyline of the election, it does not come up on a regular basis.
Right, because the gender gap in this election, the polls have shown, is going to be probably a record. She's going to do incredibly well among women, and Trump is doing incredibly well among white men. And the racial gap is going to be just massive as well.
In the turnout. Well, guys, hold that thought because we're going to have to take our first break of the program. We will stay with the story when we come back, though. Listeners, call us to join the discussion. 801-355-TALK is the number to call. Keep it tuned right here. You're listening to Behind the Headlines on KCPW and Utah Public Radio. Welcome back to Behind the Headlines, the Salt Lake Tribune reporter news roundup heard on KCPW and Utah Public Radio. I'm Roger McDonough, joined this hour by the Salt Lake Tribune's Matt Canham, Thomas Burr, Robert Gerke, and George Pyle. Again, listeners, you can join this conversation commenting at the Behind the Headlines page, currently live at sltrib.com, or calling us at 801-355-TALK. Before we left, we were talking about the emails that FBI said that it had learned of related to Hillary Clinton's time at the State Department. And Tommy Burr there in Washington, at first it didn't say all that much more. I don't know if we've learned more about those emails, but Republicans took this as an opportunity to renew attacks on Hillary Clinton over her email. And Utah Representative Jason Chaffetz, who is chairman of the House Oversight Committee, played a hand in this story. Is that right?
Absolutely. So Chaffetz, as we know, is not a media-shy person. And once he got the letter, he said he talked to legal counsel and tweeted it out pretty quickly within, 20, 30 minutes of receiving the letter. And that has a lot of Democrats upset, saying that, he shouldn't have done that. Maybe he had prior knowledge this was coming, and that's why he's now saying he's voting for Donald Trump. But this is not a storyline that's going to go away on Election Day. This is a storyline that's going to continue. There's already now talk from a couple of Republicans about, impeachment of Clinton. Should she win the White House, they would take this information and do their own investigation, continuing and look at, removing her from office because of her careless handling of the emails with possible classified information. And Chaffetz is going to be the kind of the White House's arch nemesis going forward in many ways, because as chairman of the oversight, you have a lot of unilateral power to send subpoenas and look at everything from continuing on the Benghazi stuff to the emails to the Clinton Foundation. There's no limit to where he can go.
And he said he had material for quote years of investigations. That was something that he had said. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So, yeah, he's already planning, the next couple of years should Clinton win. I assume that if you're going to take a job in the Clinton administration, just know that you're going to spend a lot of time in the oversight room testifying.
Huh. Chaffetz in a tweet characterized what FBI Director James Comey had said as kind of a reopening of an investigation into Clinton. The Clinton campaign was providing talking points to its surrogates on this, and those talking points kind of slam Chaffetz, though not by name, for mischaracterizing what the FBI had actually said, what Comey had actually said. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly the that's exactly the point. Chaffetz said they'd reopened it. The case was never closed. The case was still an ongoing situation. They just didn't have any new information. But in those talking points that I got a hold of from the Clinton campaign to its surrogates, quote, "It's outrageous, though not surprising, that a Republican chairman would knowingly mislead the public and media by leaking and mischaracterizing this letter." They didn't name Chaffetz, but it's pretty clear that's who they're talking about.
Well, and at the same time, FBI Director Comey has come under fire for the decision to reveal so soon before the election that it had these additional emails potentially related to Clinton to look at. Kind of an interesting storyline there as well.
The Republican and Democratic law enforcement and Justice Department officials have criticized that, including those from the Bush administration, saying that there are policies in place to say you don't do this on purpose because you're clouding an election without any evidence to really show whether it's worth saying anything about this. So, in some ways, some people are saying it's almost electioneering that Comey There's people out there saying that Comey is colluding with House Republicans to bring down Clinton. And again, we won't know anything before Election Day, probably.
Well, and I think there's always this delightful irony where you've got the Clinton people who were praising Comey for his principled stand and not bringing charges against Clinton, and now the same people are trashing the guy for putting this out there. And Tommy's right, it won't go away. I think we're going to see I think the damage has been done to Clinton that we're going to see from this, because we're not going to have answers before the Election Day. And I think things might stabilize a little bit when the dust settles. But it's hurt her. I think it's pretty clear from the polling that we've seen nationally and in those battleground states that it's put a dent in her chances.
A quick reminder to our listeners that we'd love to hear your thoughts on the stories that we're covering today. Call us at 801-355-8255. That's 801-355-TALK. You can also put your comments at sltrib.com. We do have a caller on the line right now. This is Susan from Smithfield. And Susan, thanks for joining us on Behind the Headlines.
Yes. Well, with this election, I hope people remember to look at the bigger picture. I think when this election all started out, everybody wanted someone new. They didn't want any previous political person in. And because we have two candidates that many people have objections to, please, voters, remember the bigger picture. I'm married to a Brit, and I have friends in Canada, and they are watching to see if we believe in our political system and each other. And so what we may need to look at is that the great American candidate may be 4 years out. Like, we had Carter, we had Gerald Ford. Now I'm giving away my age. But then remember, 4 years later, we had Ronald Reagan, who, love him or not, he was the right man for the job. The economy was coming back. And he really was, it was terrific. So,
Susan, you said the rest of the world is watching who we elect. You're married to a Brit.
Yeah.
Can I ask if you've made a decision about who you're going to vote for in this election?
Well, remember, in Utah, we have more than two choices.
Right.
Yeah, three choices. But, with myself, I probably want you to understand that electing a person who has no political experience, it's like going in for surgery, and they're like, okay, this guy used to butcher cattle, but now he's going to do your appendix. And I'm like, don't you think we ought to elect somebody who's actually in the political system? And so to close this out, remember, our great candidate may be 4 years away, and that we should believe in our country, and we should believe that people, human beings, we've been struggling to put together good government systems. Please believe that people, in the long run, if they're allowed to do the right thing, they will.
All right. So we can survive the next 4 years is the point you're trying to make, essentially, whatever happens, Susan. Thank you very much for your call. And listeners, we'd, again, love to hear from others of you. 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. George Pyle, editorial voice here. We've gone down an interesting path here, talking about, inviting listeners to call in and tell us who they're voting for and what kind of comments they've got on the election. But an interesting final few days before we head into the election.
Well, as we've talked about, early voting, mail voting in so much of the country. So, you know, the October surprise now becomes the November surprise. And you have the situation where, you know, the leak about some things that Donald, some horrible things that Donald Trump said a long time ago, that came out. His polling went down. Then the now the restoration of the email scandal. So Trump goes up and Clinton goes down. And it's almost like what scandal will break last? And, you know, so does that matter? Although because of so much early voting, there, I mean, we have a letter to the editor in the paper today or tomorrow from somebody who basically says, I voted early and I wish I hadn't. I want my ballot back. In some states, not Utah, I think, if you voted early, you can get your ballot back. You can contact the county clerk's office and say, oh, never mind, I want to void that ballot and I want to vote again. Mm-hmm. Don't try this at home, folks, because it's in Utah. The way I understand it, you can't do that. And also, you know, don't believe the Facebook posting or the tweet that says you can, especially, and don't believe that you can vote with an email or a tweet because you can't. I mean, this is one of those things that people put this stuff out and try and hope that people don't vote at all and think they have as a way of putting a monkey wrench in the system.
Well, all this last, I mean, waiting for the last scandal to break, I'm assuming that there are, I've read comments at the Trib's website where there are people waiting to the last minute to see what, you know, might be dug up before they cast their ballot. Really interesting stuff. We've mentioned Trump gaining ground against independent candidate Evan McMullen here in Utah. And one factor in that is some last minute maneuverings, not by the Trump campaign itself, but by people who are supporting the Trump campaign. And Matt Canham, this week you covered a robocall that may or may not have gone out. Actually, I don't know the answer to that. That was in support of Trump from a white nationalist.
So our listeners should know that for $2,000, you can send a call to 200,000 homes in the state of Utah and send any message you want.
Wow.
And white nationalist William Johnson from California did just that. He's done this before. He did it back in March, criticizing Mitt Romney when Mitt Romney went after Donald Trump. And he did so again this time, and his target was Evan McMullen. William Johnson actually delivers the call. He's the one who talks. He identifies himself as a white nationalist and says that Evan McMullen is a closet homosexual who has two mommies. It's very inflammatory. Donald Trump's campaign denounced it. Republicans who received it, obviously, some of them didn't find that that was very appropriate. And it was it came out on Monday. It was going to run through Wednesday. Wednesday morning, William Johnson apologized for it and pulled the last day's worth of robocall. So I don't know what portion of that 200,000 did not hear it. But I had family members who received that call. It went to as many landlines as you can get, and it was random in the state of Utah. So his response was that he said it was a mean-spirited message and that he humbly retracts it. He said he sent it because that America and the West is gripped by an extreme and fatal malady, the failure to marry and have children. He said that the white birth rate is so astonishingly low that that Western civilization would soon cease to exist. This is a racist individual who thought that sending this robocall would help Donald Trump here. And I mean, the hard part is on something like that, it's hard to gauge the effect.
Right. Is it a positive effect? Is it a negative effect? McMullen, I know, held an event at the University of Utah's Hinckley Institute of Politics and said that the GOP has a problem with racism to a certain extent. And that I don't know if he was addressing this, saying that this is a sign of
that. He was trying to tie this white nationalist to Donald Trump and Donald Trump's campaign, probably a little closer than it actually exists. But at the same point, Evan McMullen's campaign, in large part, is based off of the fact that he doesn't think that conservatives should support someone who has said the things Donald Trump has said about women, people of color, people with disabilities, that he thinks that any political movement should be open to all Americans. And he is a Republican voter and a Republican former congressional aide,
right,
who his biggest problem with Donald Trump is the way that he has talked about people.
Well, and you mentioned him as being the only candidate with a ground game here in Utah, really. And actually, I want to turn this to Tommy there in Washington, D.C. Tommy, what's the view from the nation's capital of McMullen's candidacy? You know, he's on the ballot in just 11 states. He's certainly having an impact here in the, you know, the so-called Mormon Belt. But how is he being seen outside of this region?
You know, it's interesting. I think everyone I run into these days and knows I cover Utah is like, what's with that guy? They don't know his name necessarily, or I've jokingly heard some people call him McMuffin. I think, you know, they don't really know what's going on, but they are fascinated that, you know, he's, you know, so close in the polls, or at least was so close in the polls in Utah, and could, you know, deny Trump 6 electoral votes in a race that, you know, could come down to just a few electoral college votes right there. So people don't know much about him. They're intrigued, but all they really know is that he's, you know, only competitive in really one state, and they're trying to figure out why.
Well, he's running for president of Utah, right?
He probably
win that. It's fascinating because he's just everywhere. He's all over Utah, and these other 10 states are really, he's not doing much there. I think he'd spent some time in Idaho last week, but really focused almost exclusively on Utah because, hypothetically, if he does get electoral votes and neither Hillary or Donald Trump get to 270, then it goes to the House of Representatives to cast their votes for who's going to be the next president. And he gets to be in that mix there, and he can start angling. And you know, that's hypothetically how this might actually play out.
If he gets any electoral votes,
the top three. But the, as Tommy mentioned, everybody is fascinated with this. Before we went on the air, we were talking about how I did an interview this morning with the Belfast, Ireland, with the BBC in Ireland. Matt was saying that he did an interview with Slovakian TV, and right. And I got contacted by an Israeli TV station. He's getting, you know, Utah is on the political map largely because of Evan McMullen, the rise of Evan McMullen, the improbable candidacy of Evan McMullen,
right? Not
McLovin,
not the automatic lock that had been considered for the GOP for years and years. Guys, we've got to take another quick break here on Behind the Headlines, but when we come back, maybe we'll turn to some more local races, the governor's race, the race between Mia Love and Doug Owens, and a few more. You're listening to Behind the Headlines here on KCPW and Utah Public Radio. Back in a moment. Welcome back to Behind the Headlines. I'm Roger McDonough with KCPW Public Radio, and joined this hour by the Salt Lake Tribune's Matt Canham, Thomas Burr, Robert Gerke, and George Pyle. Listeners, you can join us with your comments and questions by calling 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255, or commenting at sltrib.com. When we left, we were talking about the candidacy of Evan McMullen, and I believe we have a caller on the line right now, Daniel in San Pete County, who has a comment related to the presidential race and McMullen. Daniel, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I just wanted to comment about his campaign and the implications of it.
Okay.
First of all, the main thing that comes across is Mr. McMullen is trying to utilize his so-called qualifications as a former CIA operative and also a former Mormon missionary and former having worked for Goldman Sachs. Okay. Let me just say one thing right now. Those two first qualifications, the fact that he was supposedly a CIA operative, and I understand, I read the article the Tribune wrote about him, and he worked for Goldman Sachs. Honestly speaking, as somebody who has very similar qualifications, those are two of the worst possible points in his favor for wanting to even consider voting for this man. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of reasons for that. Goldman Sachs, for example, I'll just give you an example, is one of the most corrupt banking institutions in the world. It is well-known and well-established, even in the establishment media, in the pockets of all congressmen. They influence government, so that's a bad qualification. Mm-hmm. Number two, McMullen keeps associating Trump with kind of negative things and saying that there's going to be a police state if he gets in, and saying all of his bad remarks to women and everything. And basically, in trying to put down Trump, and everybody acknowledges this, I've even listened to national programs, is that his effort to dethrone Trump has got to be right out of the book of Hillary Clinton, because whatever
we are getting your point there, and I understand what you're saying. Also, your connection's a little bad, so I'm going to just bring this down. You know, people have accused McMullen or said that McMullen is sort of a plant on the part of the Democrats to draw votes away. I mean, this is a somewhat of a a theory that's put out there, Matt Canham, and then also comments here from Daniel about these not being great qualifications. You wrote the story about Evan McMullen in the Salt Lake Tribune, his sort of biographical background.
Right.
How does that sound to you?
No, so he is a CIA operative, former CIA operative. We talked to people who worked with him in the CIA. There's been other reporting. He was in the CIA, for anyone who has any doubts on that. And there's, you know, it's obviously hard to vet when someone is an undercover spy for the United States exactly what they did in that job. But we know he worked there. We also know he worked for Goldman Sachs, and he knows that that doesn't exactly play particularly well among voters. He points out that he was there for a few years, worked on mergers and acquisitions, and moved on to Congress. He looks at it as a positive in the sense that it gave him an avenue to learn about the economy. But he knows that that's not incredibly popular. The one thing that he struggles with is everywhere he goes, people have to ask him, isn't a vote for you something that helps Hillary Clinton?
Right.
And that's the challenge that he has. And his argument is, if you look at the polls, either Hillary Clinton's going to win big or it's going to be close. And if it's close, his narrow pathway to the presidency is realistic. And what he's arguing is that Donald Trump shouldn't be the president.
So not a protest vote, but an actual vote to try and
right.
keep Donald Trump from the presidency. The previous caller talked about having the credentials, having the background. Another caller before that said that having somebody in the White House who has no political experience, who has no kind of experience in government, shouldn't be there. That could be talking about either Evan McMullen, I guess, or Donald Trump.
Or Donald Trump. So this is one of the things that's interesting about a presidential race is how disparate the experience level is of the candidate. Evan McMullen worked for Congress for, I think it was 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 years, as a policy aide, and that's the totality of his political experience. Donald Trump runs a real estate business and a branding business. He doesn't, you know, his political experience is donating to campaigns. And Hillary Clinton has been in politics for a long time. There's this stunningly different experience levels from the candidates.
Well, you know, I want to bring in one more caller actually on this point, and it's somebody who didn't vote for any of the candidates we've talked about so far. Let's bring in Nate from Logan. Nate, thanks for joining us on Behind the Headlines.
Hey, thank you for having me.
A quick comment for you before we turn to local politics. Who did you vote for, and what's your comment?
I voted for Gary Johnson because he supports my values.
Okay, and none of the other candidates appeal to you at all?
No, absolutely not. I'm a combat veteran, so foreign affair, foreign policy is near and dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows the government doesn't always operate with the most wisdom. It's politics, so I always felt strongly that the government shouldn't be meddling in things that they don't know about.
Nate, thank you very much for your comment. How's Johnson faring in Utah, guys, just out of curiosity?
Actually, I had an opportunity to interview Gary Johnson this week as this thing was winding down. And, to his credit, he'll probably finish third in the election and, was doing quite well in Utah before Evan McMullen got in. He was pulling it somewhere between 14% and 16%, depending where you look at. But when McMullen got in, I think a lot of the disaffected Trump people, the people who didn't want Donald Trump and were voting for Johnson as an alternative, saw Evan McMullen as a better alternative. Gary Johnson has said that he feels like he raised some important issues during this election. He thinks he's going to probably get enough votes that the Libertarian candidate in 4 years will end up qualifying for federal funds for his campaign. And so that's a big breakthrough. They got on the ballot in all 50 states, and he thinks they'll be able to qualify more easily next time. But I think there's, there has been a sort of an opening for him to get his message out, and maybe he, didn't do quite as well as he had hoped. But, he was saying that he recognized that once you're outfunded or outspent the way he was, which we're talking about $1 billion to about $200,000.
Right.
And when you don't get on the debate stage because he was excluded from the debates, he didn't meet the polling threshold for that, it makes it really hard to get your message out. And so in some ways, and his points in that regard are valid, that the system is a little bit stacked against a third-party candidate emerging like that.
Just generally. We'll see how the Libertarians fare, depending upon what happens to the GOP over the next little while, given I guess, this narrative we've seen up until now. Let's turn now, though, Robert Gricke, staying with you, to local politics here, and begin with the governor's race. Pretty smooth sailing so far for Governor Gary Herbert, according to the polls.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, look, it's very, very difficult when you have an incumbent governor who is mostly free of scandal and you know, the economy's doing okay. It makes a very small target for somebody, for a challenger to go against him, and especially in a heavily Republican state like we have in Utah. The governor probably got his biggest scare during the convention when he was challenged from the conservative wing, from the right. Ever since then, I mean, even though Mike Weinholz has put a lot of his own money in, he's put $2.7 million of his own money in. Both of them have raised about $3 million roughly, but there's just not much sticking to the governor right now in terms of the criticism and the attacks from the Weinholz camp.
There is, I just want to bring up the fact, I mean, you kind of glossed over the fact that during the state party convention, he actually didn't win his nomination that way. He had to go the alternative route to get the nomination.
Yeah, I mean, the governor, when you look at how easily he's making this general election look, you kind of forget that coming out of the state convention, the state Republican convention, he was within a few dozen votes of being eliminated, and then this could have been a very different November than what we're seeing right now.
How expensive was the governor's race? And, I mean, how much money did Democratic challenger Mike Weinholz pour into it compared to the governor?
Yeah, like I mentioned, he's put $2.7 million of his own money into it and then raised another $300,000 on top of that. And it's striking because 4 years ago, we saw the Democrats spend roughly, I believe it was about $200,000 total on this race. Now we're seeing $3 million, and the result, the outcome's about the same.
Okay. George Pyle, we talked about this in the presidential race a little bit, but, the GOP candidate party means a lot here in Utah, maybe more so than in other parts of the country.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It's very heavily Republican, and power always accumulates onto itself. I mean, there are other states that, you know, if you're a Republican, there's not much bother. It's a Democratic state. Here, it's a Republican state. I mean, the House U.S. representatives and the legislature is gerrymandered to the point where Democrats don't have much chance. But you can't gerrymander a governorship. That's the whole state. So it's just habit. And as we say, there's not any big scandal attached to the governor. Plus, there are enough things that he's offered that even, you know, put him a little bit to the center so that he might be a little more attractive to people who are not all that happy with how far right the legislature is.
Which is why he was vulnerable in the party convention.
Exactly, yeah.
Matt Canham, just because we have so little time left, I want to turn quickly from the governor's race and get a little bit of information in on the 4th District race between Mia Love and Doug Owens. This is a rematch. What's the basic outline here?
The whole race, we have Representative Mia Love saying that she did a good job and Congress deserves two more years, where Doug Owens' message has been that she's too partisan and he'd be a more centrist view. Right now, it looks like voters want to stick with Mia Love. Our last poll showed her up by 12 points. Both campaigns acknowledge that she has a lead that's roughly around that area. Doug Owens is trying to say that he's coming on late. Yeah. We haven't seen that in polls yet, so they're holding out hope. But right now, she has a lead.
I may have gotten that wrong in the introduction to the show because I believed that there had been a closer narrowing in the past.
Well,
while,
there's been a narrowing, but it's a narrowing from 18, 19 points to 12, 13 points. So it's come down, but not enough that you would consider this a toss-up on election night.
And a great deal of spending, of course, in that campaign, as always.
Yeah, Mia Love is an amazing fundraiser nationwide, so she brought in well over $3 million in this race. And Doug Owens is about 1.5.
Okay. Guys, when we meet again next Friday, assuming you guys are here, the election will be over, we hope, and we will be done talking about this.
We're never leaving.
We're never leaving. Yeah, you guys can stay here for the next week. But the hour has come to a close, and we need to turn to our underplayed stories of the week. And who's ready with an underplayed story? Robert Gricke?
I'll just throw this one out there. It's one that you'll want to watch on Election Day, and that's going to be who ends up controlling the United States Senate. There are a number of races in Nevada and Missouri that are sort of right on the cusp there. Even in Florida, I believe, was a toss-up. And this could have as much impact on the direction of the country for the coming years as the presidential election.
Okay. George Pyle, you've got one ready.
Well, we were talking about elections. If you have a mail ballot and you haven't sent it in yet, it has to be postmarked by the day before the election, not on election day, the day before, which if you're in a rural community where maybe they don't collect the box, you have to worry about that. And in Salt Lake County, because this is being considered a mail election, there will only be like 37 polling places out there on election day, not the hundreds that there usually are. So if you're just thinking that you're going to get up on election day and go down the street, there may not be any place there.
Think again.
Look this up.
All right, George Pyle, urging you to mail in your ballots. Tommy Burr, what's your underplayed story of the week if you've got one?
Actually, I'm going to give you my prediction for Tuesday. Ready? Drum roll, please. I believe that we will see one of the highest rates of girls missing school across this country because mom and dad are going to bring their daughters to the polling places, snap a couple photos, and say, you know, I voted for woman for president.
I like your prediction there, Tommy Burr. Matt Canham, your underplayed story.
I'm going to jump from politics and go to something that's going to happen right after the election. In Salt Lake City, the mayor and the city council are going to name four new homeless shelters on November 21st, and they're not going to let the public have input until they're already picked.
Until they've picked those places. That's interesting. Well, that's Matt Canham with his underplayed story. For mine, I've got nothing. I'll go with the fact that KCPW here is working to finish out its fall fundraising goal, $15,000 to raise in one day, and you can pledge in support of nonprofit public radio at kcpw.org. Robert,
Cubs winning isn't your underplayed story?
I know it should be. It should be, especially with an Indians fan here in
the
studio.
I don't think that was underplayed.
Matt Canham, Robert Gerke, Thomas Burr, George Pyle, all with the Salt Lake Tribune. Thank you very much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for this edition of Behind the Headlines. Thanks to Jesse Ellis at KCPW, Tom Williams and Connor Rivers at Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune's Emily Means. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week.